This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here for today's interview episode with Rebecca Ford.
Hi, Katie.
Rebecca, you got to talk to an actress whose name you helped me realize I've been mispronouncing because it's much more German than I realized. So why don't you tell me who today's interview is with?
Yes, today we're talking to Sassy Betts, who some people call Zazie Beetz. But I went down the rabbit hole and she says her name in the interview. And she's half German. So it's a German name and that's how you pronounce it.
I just can't believe we've gone all these years mispronouncing her name. I feel honestly terrible about it. I'm so glad we can correct the record.
She's very chill about it. I think that's part of it.
I guess a lifetime of correcting pronunciation will get you there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you talked to her for her role in Steven Soderbergh's new series, Full Circle, which is honestly a little mysterious to me, and I don't know if it's supposed to be shrouded in mystery, and we don't want to spoil things, but why don't you tell me more about it?
Yeah, so it's a Max series that comes out this Friday, and it snuck up on me as well, but I got the screeners early, and I just flew through the series. It's sort of a crime mystery thing where she plays a... Postal Service Inspection Service Unit Inspector, Detective.
Whoa.
So the Postal Service has their own detective unit, which I did not know. And she ends up investigating this crime. It has an incredible cast. It includes Claire Danes, and she has some great scenes with her. So I found her character just really interesting. She's this sort of brilliant detective who has this really messed up personal life and is a difficult personality. And I thought Zazie really played the character really well. So I really wanted to talk to her about it.
She seems like the kind of actress that you've seen pop up in other things and being like, I'd see you do just about anything. And playing a troubled detective is such a classic archetype for someone to really be able to stretch their wings. It sounds like that's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah, it's a good role for her and good timing because she also appears in the most recent season of Black Mirror. She plays a paparazzi in one of the episodes. And so we also talked about that because it's interesting to sort of be playing this role that she's experienced. You know, she talked a little bit about dealing with paparazzi and what that experience has been like. And so I thought that was also an interesting role to take on. I think she's being... I find her selection of roles really interesting. And she actually teased that she feels like she hasn't... I've been able to show her full potential yet and has a couple projects that she feels like will really put her other abilities on display that are hopefully coming up soon.
Ooh, something to look forward to. Well, for now, let's hear your conversation with Zazie Betts.
Zazie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I watched all of Full Circle, which is going to debut on Max this Friday. I found it a totally captivating show. I know you worked with Steven Soderbergh before, but tell me sort of how the project came to you. What was the pitch that made you really interested in it?
I was initially just very pleased that Steven was reaching out again at all.
That's a nice compliment. Always,
a sign of, I'm like, okay, it worked the last time. He likes me. But I also really enjoyed working with him. I think he has a very relaxed and playful way of approaching his work. It feels like he really wants to be there and he really trusts his actors in a great way that lets you truly just play in the sandbox he provides. And so I was excited to just work with him again. And I had the chance to read the scripts, and then we had a phone call. So I was lucky with an offer. And yeah, on the call, he told me it was mine to lose. And so I was like, wow. And I, you know, just found the story compelling. Yeah, the juxtaposition between two different worlds on the opposite ends of the spectrum, with New York set as the background. And yeah, the meditation on how our actions have ripple effects and how they impact those around us, even when we don't think they do.
Yeah, it's a complicated story with a lot of different characters that they weave together so beautifully. And, you know, your character gets to interact with a lot of them. I had never heard of the U.S. Postal Inspection Service before this. So I'm curious what you had to sort of learn about who these people are who work for this, and because that's such a makeup of your character.
Yeah, I thought that was, I mean, I think it's funny because like Ed is a comedy writer. And so I think a lot of the show is sort of surreptitiously, maybe not so surreptitiously, but is infused with, I think, jokes like that. Not to say the USPIS is a joke, because they're not. But yeah, I mean, mail fraud, it is a felony to open up other people's mail. And yeah, they deal with things that are of that nature. You know, she was already involved with sort of the insurance premium fraud that was going on, which is where Ed drew his original inspiration from. He had read a news article about a crime syndicate in New York that was doing that, taking out life insurance claims on people and then killing them. And he kind of wove this story that was way different. And they also get involved in the way that other parts of government that are detecting and finding out in the same way. I think it just doesn't sound as fancy as CIA or FBI. Right. Or
And Harmony is interesting because she's clearly brilliant, especially at reading people, but she's also sort of a mess in her own life. How much of her backstory did you think about, maybe even beyond what's told in this story, as you were preparing to play her?
Yeah, I think a big thing for me was dissecting her, the psych eval that gets referenced a few times during the show, and we never explicitly find out what happens, but based on her personality throughout the show, and I spoke with Ed about this as well, we kind of like came up with our own diagnosis essentially for her. And that was also based a bit on my experience with people that I know who exhibit behavior that she exhibits, and my experience with those people, and also what drives people who have sort of like, yeah, I suppose sort of a bit unreliable behavior in the way that Melody sort of depicts. So that was like that was a big thing for me. So I could sort of try to be consistent in that space. But then also, yeah, we talked a lot. I talked with Steven and Ed a lot about sort of her inner life and her insecurities. And I think she presents as someone who, or she tries to present herself as someone who is very confident and wants to take charge of a room. And I mean, I think she is ambitious, but I think a lot of that is also by insecurity and needing validation and wanting validation. I think she does feel that she has an instability. You know, she has a hard time, I think, maintaining relationships in her life in general. She knows she's smart. And so I think she uses that to her as a weapon and as a tool, but I don't think she serves herself in the best way she can all the time, even if she knows that she's not, you know, even if she knows that she could do better. And so I think there's a lot of wanting love and needing love, but then pushing it away as a sort of a protective element. Like, I know people who do this, but like people who will exhibit sort of uncomfortable behavior, or like her not always actively leaning into the emotional temperature of a room and doing that knowingly, so that when also a rejection happens, somebody can kind of point the finger at, I'm rejecting that behavior, but not necessarily who you are inherently. Versus if you just appear truly as an authentic self, if you are rejected, then that is a rejection of you, which I think is very scary for some people. So there was that element too. But I do think she also really does believe she can do this job and deserves it and wants to do well, both as sort of career validation, but also just, I think she's like, I've worked hard and I deserve this. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I think she has a complicated relationship with her parents and family and is kind of a bit of an isolated person. So yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about her stuff since a lot of it is sort of buried in just who she is versus us talking about it on the show. But
yeah, I think that's why I like this character so much, because she is so complex. And as the series goes along, you get to see a little bit more and more. And I was always surprised by each sort of layer. You mentioned sort of being inspired by people in your real life. Is that something that happens with a lot of your work and your characters, that you seem observant of other people in that way?
Yeah, I try to draw from generally as much as I can from my own experience and from the lived experience of those that I know. Of course, I also, you know, will research and watch things online, but I think the more intimate it can be, at least for me, the easier it is to access and the easier it is for me to also truly empathize. Like, I think somebody like Melody, you know, she's funny and I think she's entertaining on the show, but I think she would be somebody very difficult to have any kind of relationship with, working, friendship, romantic. And I think it was important for me to understand how to empathize with her and to not judge her. And I think part of me, I think, is I think I was able to do that because I have spent time with people who can, you know, sometimes have a harder time with relationship building, and I can see them with their full context and still approach with love and grace, you know, to the best of my abilities. And so, yeah, I think that allowed me to open Zassie's heart to Harmony more. You know, on the page she reads as this like wild cannonball. And, you know, on set, we would joke about that. But ultimately, I did always, I take her side and I always will.
Yeah.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And the show has quite the cast. You have great scenes with a lot of the actors, Claire Danes especially, and Jim Gaffigan. Is there anything about working with them, that any of your co-stars, that either surprised you or that sort of affected your own process in those scenes?
Yeah, I had a lot of time with Shay and Claire and Jim, I would say, out of everyone. I have to say it was overall, you know, a true ensemble cast, and everybody was really, really lovely to work with. I think working with somebody like Soderbergh kind of, I feel like all the actors are like on an equal playing field in a way. Like Soderbergh is like our God, and then we're all the thespians in the room together. So I think I felt like a very collaborative and true ensemble experience where everybody was really trying to support each other. Jim was so, you know, I mean, I was going to say funny. He's a comedian, but I really liked how I think he took his character very seriously in terms of not trying to make him a joke. We talked a lot about like how his character has sort of a shift in the series. And so, he took that very seriously. And like, I think just his natural candor is just like, is funny. So I don't know, if, you know, so we were able to play a lot in those scenes. And it's always really nice for me to work with people who are like great improvers. I just really enjoyed working with him. And then Claire, I think our characters, or my character, I think, gets the most vulnerable in a way with Claire. Mm-hmm. And so that was fun for me to explore, because I don't think Harmony really exhibited her vulnerability much to other people, even to her girlfriend. And Shay is just like lovely and kind. And so it's just really relaxing to be on set with him. And yeah, I mean, everybody was lovely, but yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you hear everyone seems to want to work with Soderbergh, as you're saying. He is this god that everyone has such great things to say about. But what is it about working with him that especially, like, drives you as an actor?
I think he genuinely believes in casting. So I think once he's cast someone, he really trusts that their instinct and their interpretation, they are the expert of their character. So he really, really trusts his performers and doesn't really question your version of the character. And, you know, of course it's collaborative and there's guidance and all of that. But I think he really sort of like sets up the sandbox and then lets the actors do their thing and truly kind of organically follows them with the camera, which is, I think, something you can feel, like, you know, we have blocking and things like that to a degree, but certainly not as intensely as some other productions will. He's very natural with his camera movement and follows you. And the camera, I think, carries on from one scene into the next. And the movement is also a character and a storyteller in a way. And so I think that just allows for so much flexibility as an actor to really just kind of go for it and try things. And I think unless it's like super left field, he lets you go. And so there's something very freeing about that. It's nice to be trusted like that. It makes you prepare more in a way, because you really have to be on top of your character. And also, he's just quite pleasant. Like, he's relaxed. You really trust him. You can really tell he's the master of the story. Like, you know, we were block shooting this show 6 episodes all at once, essentially. So on one day, you could be shooting a scene from episode 6, and then after that, a scene from episode 3, and then after that, a scene from episode 2. And so it was really hard to sometimes keep all the information and material in your mind. I mean, you generally shoot out of order, but that's different if you have 100 pages of information versus 300 pages of information to keep track of. And so sometimes, you know, you'd be like, wait, where are we? Like, what happened to my character right before? And Steven and Ed, our writer, invariably always knew exactly what was going on. You could always really rely on them with that. And I think Steven in general, like, the way he pieces things together, which is why he also shoots very quickly. Like, he has it all in his brain. You can really just trust him. And yeah, that's very, it's, you know, it's just nice to know, I'm like, he's going to make the best version of whatever we're making. And you can just like rely on that and not try to protect also your performance, right? Because if you don't trust a director, then you're also not going to take as many risks, because you're not going to believe that they're going to actually choose the take that makes the most sense for the story. They're just going to, I don't know. Yeah, you protect yourself as an actor, because otherwise that'll make you look crazy. So if you just trust your director, you can go for it, and you know that they'll land the plane.
Yeah. And you also appear in the most recent season of Black Mirror, which just debuted on Netflix. And yeah. I found it really interesting that you play this paparazzi, because obviously as an actor, that's something you probably had to experience from the other side of that. What was that like to sort of be on that side of that relationship?
Yeah, I have to say, you know, I have been papped a few times, but not as intensely as, say, Britney Spears or anything like that. My life isn't plagued by paparazzi. My character has sort of these shifting morals around it, and she's questioning mm-hmm. her motivation to be doing this job and sees the impact of her work, but also needs income. And this is what she's been doing. And I think it's also sometimes it's hard to empathize with people who have great privilege. So, I sort of approached her from that space. And also she, you know, from her just emotional standpoint, I think she had a lot of my character didn't like herself. And so I think that exhibited in her behavior as well, in a way. But yeah, I found that character quite interesting. And then overall, you know, yeah, the episode is about exploitation, but I also think in some ways, everyone sort of, we are the paparazzi and we are also the watched, and we're doing that to ourselves over and over again. And in some ways, everyone is the victim here. And we're constantly scrutinizing one another. And especially with sort of all the exposure that we have nowadays, I think no one can really truly live a private life in the same way. And so, yeah, I think that the show leaned on that too. I think that Bo was also the victim of a larger system.
Yeah. It's interesting because this is one of the few episodes that doesn't have that real technology hook that some of the others do, but you're sort of tying it to social media and where we are now. So in that way, it actually does, which I think people were surprised it didn't have that tech hook that a lot of the others do.
Yeah. I figured people, I mean, reading the episode, I was like, oh, it's going to definitely be divisive. I haven't read any reviews. I think I vaguely know that it is divisive. Is it like a traditional Black Mirror episode or not? And I figured people would feel that way in terms of, you know, it not being tech forward and or kind of a premonition of the future to come. But I still think that A, what I like about Black Mirror is that I think it takes risks, and I think it is a risk to deviate from the traditional format of what people expect from you to on how to tell a story. And they've done that in other ways too. You know, even the Bandersnatch film is different from anything Netflix had ever done before, anything that most filmmaking has done before, and, you know, not being a TV episode. Like, I think they've already been playing with format and playing with their storytelling, and so I'm not surprised. I think it's kind of punk to try something different. And I still think it is ultimately at its core, Black Mirror isn't about text. It's about our shadow selves and, you know, the state of humanity and the layers within us. And it's just, I think hopefully this episode is just another reflection on humanity and who we are.
Yeah, I think it definitely feels that way.
Yeah.
And speaking of upcoming work, I know you've wrapped the Joker sequel, and there's been a lot of talk about the musical elements of this sequel, but I'm curious what you think might surprise people who loved the first one that's sort of beyond that musical part.
I know I can't. I've been told I cannot say anything at all. Nothing.
What no Joker question. Sequel?
Oh, yeah. I will say, what can I say? I think it's a bunch of smart people making it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same team making the sequel. And I mean, I haven't seen everything. I know my portion, but I believe that they can.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about risks, I think they made it plenty with the first and it worked.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Didn't expect anything less.
I think there was a lot of skepticism about the first one, just, you know, from many different angles. And, you know, I remember reading the script and being so utterly convinced, like 10 pages in, I was like, I have to do this story. And I fought for that role. And I think they're smart. So I think it'll be interesting.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And And do you see any sort of through line to the work you've been doing lately, the characters you've been taking on, you know, at this point in your career and your life?
I have to say, there are a lot of things that I haven't done yet that I really want to do. I do think a lot about diversity in characters. I would love to have longevity in my career. And so to me, that means sort of not being seen as just one thing. So people don't kind of automatically think of me as, I don't know, young action woman or something right. like that. And so, and I also really have thought a lot about, you know, there are ways, I think it can be very easy to get caught up in the idea of how do you game your career? And I think everybody does that to a degree in whatever career they have of like, you know, would this, I don't know, for you perhaps, would writing this story be beneficial or not? Whether or not I'm interested in the topic matter, like would audiences be interested in this? Or, you know, maybe I'm not a huge fan of the script, but this director is good. Or maybe I'm not a huge fan of this director, but the script is interesting. And like, you know, is this kind of role something that would boost my career? But am I into this role? Like there's so much of that that you can do. And I think ultimately you really just have to let that go and just be like, what am I just feeling right now?
Yeah.
I don't want to be so precious about every decision and be like, yeah, sometimes I'm going to fail. I'm going to just try this thing and that's great. And maybe it didn't work, but I tried something. And then I've been approaching my characters a lot more that way too, of like wanting to implement some little element of risk or chaos in something. Like this is sort of a silly thing, but to me, this is an example of that. Like my character, Melody Harmony in Full Circle, I decided to give her a row of bottom braces just because I thought it was interesting. Yeah. And I thought it sort of was indicative of some other things about who she is and her character and what might matter to her or not. And that was never written in the script, nothing. I just made that call by myself. And that was about chaos and freedom. And I think that's just more interesting to watch and riskier to do, but it's more so much more fun. So yeah, I'm trying to like, I want to have fun and not just be stressed about work and being pressured and being like, am I good? Am I bad? You know, I don't really read reviews. So I'm like, I can't be, even if it's good. Like sometimes I'm like, I don't even want the input. I'm like, I'm just trying to live my life.
That does it for today's episode. As you might remember, we'll have a bonus Emmy nominations reaction episode coming on Wednesday this week. So stay tuned. Lots to talk about. In the meantime, find us at VanityFair.com, on Twitter and Instagram at VF Awards Insider. I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich, and Rebecca?
Becca M. Ford.
Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Fuchs.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of The Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read The Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
From PRX.